I am here with Michaela Sundquist, Katie Botkin, and Pam Duquette to talk about a project called Sandpoint Forward. Michaela and Katie are co-leaders of Sandpoint Forward, and Pam Duquette, who serves on Sandpoint's City Council, serves as their government liaison. Just to let people hear what you guys sound like, I'll say good morning, Michaela.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Jack. How are you doing?
I'm just fine. I'm trying to make my my picks for March Madness before tip-off in about 55 minutes, so we'll see how I do. And good morning to you, Pam.
Good morning, Jack. Lovely to see you.
Lovely to see you, too. You're a familiar voice on these airwaves.
I love our community radio, KRFY 88.5.
Well, thanks, Pam.
You're welcome.
That's nice to hear. So, I have read one article, I think, in the Sandpoint Reader about Sandpoint Forward, and that's all I know. And I would not be surprised if many of our listeners have never even heard of it and have no idea what it is. Give us the broadest possible outline. What is Sandpoint Forward?
Well, I would like to start with the brief history of how it came about, if that's okay.
Yes.
Early last summer, late spring, I was approached by some longtime residents and Jean Girth to see if I would be willing to be part of a grant opportunity for Sandpoint. And I said, sure, because Jean and I have talked for years about disasters, climate, weather-related disasters, and what would we do? And so, as a liaison with the city, I said, yes, I'd be happy to. The Model Forest Policy Program, MFPP, is who applied for the grant. They're a national 501c3 nonprofit that builds capacity of communities to be climate resilient by sustaining water resources, productive forests, citizens' well-being, and thriving economies. And the grant was funded by a climate resilience fund partnering with the Climate Smart Communities Initiatives.
Okay.
So many acronyms. Yeah. I thought I was done with those when I was done teaching, but new. So it's funded by that and NOAA and other technical support. I said, sure, I'd be happy to help with a grant on this. I thought it was good timing because we had reinstated our sustainability committee, and I am liaison with the city council and that committee, and it supported a couple of our goals in our comprehensive plan. So then we were supposed to get a community leader, and we got Michaela, and then we needed a co-leader. So if that was clear,
yeah,
did I cover it?
And I can follow up a little bit on what Pam said. As she mentioned, it is a grant-funded project and opportunity. And what is really cool about our grant, which is Sandpoint Forward, it is a grant project, is that we are one in 11 first pilot communities to be doing this. There is money in California, Oklahoma, Louisiana, on the East Coast. We are one of the Northwest communities represented. And actually, a little plug for Sandpoint is that our grant received the most money from the funding this first round. Yeah, so wow. That was really exciting. And our project is essentially building a resilience plan for the city of Sandpoint and some of the surrounding areas. If you've ever been to any of our meetings, you know how we've tried to figure out what those surrounding areas are. It's too much to do the whole county, but we are doing a little bit outside the city of Sandpoint. And we are essentially, like I said, trying to create a plan of resilience for the city. And I think Katie has that definition for us to share.
Yeah, so our project focuses on resilience, or the ability to adapt to disasters effectively. And resilience requires contingency planning. And I have somewhat of a background in corporate work. And in corporate settings, this is called risk management. Challenges are bound to come, and planning for them takes some work. It makes communities, businesses, and individuals more resilient. Our goal overall is to increase resilience and adaptive capacity for Sandpoint in the larger area by developing an effective, durable, and fundable resilience plan that can be integrated into the existing Sandpoint Comprehensive Plan and the Bonner County Hazard Mitigation Plan, among other documents that the county has.
Mm-hmm. You're focused specifically on climate-related disaster management or mitigation, I guess.
Yeah, that would be the resilience piece. So we're thinking wildfire, flooding, invasive species, drought, those sort of things. But as Katie said, we want this to be effective, durable, long-lasting, and equitable and fair. So we also consider something called a non-climate stressor, which is in the city of Sandpoint, we're a tourist-based economy, which is really dependent on the weather and the seasons. And I think everyone listening knows that when it's really smoky, we don't get a lot of tourists, or when the snowpack is really bad, Schweitzer suffers. And that's a non-climate stressor that our town has to plan resilience for. And also we consider a lot of other things too, like housing costs and being rural and all of that. But it's focused on the climate and weather-related disasters and how those other things play into that.
So if I could add on that, what we've done is taken our assets, tried to figure out our most important assets in the area, what hazards they face with those stressors, in including the non-climate stressors was important, we thought for sure. And it's not just the three of us working. Mm-hmm. We have community partners. We went out and solicited people who would be interested in who might share the underserved more populations. So I just want to reach out to some of them. We have Northside Fire. We have Pisney. We have the Kalispell Tribe. We have Schweitzer. We have some people with planning and zoning backgrounds, architect backgrounds, ICL, 7B, SCA, GIS mappers. So they're either planning team members or stakeholders or advisors.
Yeah, which is we have about 100 people, actually, that are on our planning and advisory mailing list, which is a lot. I mean, I'm so grateful that we have so many members of the community involved in this project.
We couldn't do it without that buy-in.
Tell me about the workings of the organization a little bit. How often you guys meet? You have 100 people on the mailing list, and you just mentioned you've got a steering committee or a...
We have an advisory committee. We have a planning team. Mm-hmm. Okay. We have stakeholders. Mm-hmm. The three of us with our practitioner meet every Monday. We have a Zoom. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then we have a planning team that we meet with twice a month. Mm-hmm. And they can Zoom or come in. Anybody listening to this who wants to be a part, please get a hold of us, because we'll take all hands on deck for this.
You could attend virtually, and that's open to the public.
Okay. On those two planning team meetings. And we did have a listening session that Michaela can talk about.
Yeah, we did. We had a community listening session at Evans Brothers, and members of the community were able to come in and share their opinions. Katie wrote some really great questions, and we had a really awesome conversation actually about what the community needs and is missing. And it was really interesting. The main topic of conversation was not really knowing what to do in the event of a disaster, and what the evacuation routes would look like. A woman had animals in town. She was thinking, what would she do with that? So really it was this idea that if our leaders know what to do, the community felt that they didn't know what to do. So there was a little bit of a disconnect there, which is what we're hoping this project can kind of fill the gaps in. Like Katie mentioned, we could get put into some of the county plans. That's our end goal, is to be a published resiliency plan with the city or the county or in some document like that. So that is like our end goal for this. And the community has been really involved in giving their thoughts and opinions and time. We have really awesome spatial mappers that have been mapping the water. I'll give a shout out to Eric from the Kalispell Tribe. He's doing all of our water mapping. John Waldrop has been doing a lot of our fire mapping. We have a bunch of other people that come and help us map. Mm-hmm. And it's really a team effort. Like, the three of us are here talking to you, but we have a whole team behind us.
Yeah. I guess, so when I think of disasters likely to face Sandpoint, the one that comes to my mind is fire. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, wildfires that... Probably how you guys see it, too. Is that kind of risk number one?
Yeah. So we actually put out a survey, which I'll mention in a minute. And that was definitely the top priority for the community. Mm-hmm. Has been so far. And certainly in our sessions with the planning team, that's come up quite a bit. It does seem to be absolutely the top priority. Mm-hmm. The direct wildfire and also smoke from surrounding wildfires, which we kind of separated those out because they're a little different. Yeah. But even the smoke, as Michaela was mentioning, smoke can make a huge difference to our economy. Having neighboring smoke, just it kills the summer tourism season.
Yeah.
And our health.
And our health. Yeah, absolutely.
And in addition to wildfire, I was reading the Bonner County Emergency Operations Plan, and flooding has actually been historically the most disastrous natural disaster for North Idaho, which was a surprise to me. I would have assumed fire. Mm-hmm. But it has historically been flooding. So our top two, wildfire and floods, we talk a lot about in our planning and what that would look like, how to be more resilient to those two.
Mm-hmm. And so one of the ways that connects with the city also is that rain on snow events has been hurting our wastewater treatment plant. Mm-hmm. We've had issues. And another way was wanting an evacuation idea, a disaster plan. I did get to ask the mayor if we had one in the city, and he told me that he's working on that, and he has given the chiefs till July to come up with their plan. So that's the inner workings back and forth, which I think is going to be good.
Okay. You know, I mean, you guys are kind of working on, are you working with the chiefs as well or talking to them? Are they?
Not necessarily. The chiefs, but we do have some leadership in wildfire and like the fire districts.
Right now, we're without a plan. I mean, basically, correct. in the event of a wildfire that looks like it's, you know, this is fresh in probably everybody's mind after the fires that dominated the headlines in January in LA, and were so disastrous. Like if suddenly, you know, the winds shifted in the right way and it looked like fire was coming to Sandpoint, and we do see every summer we see evacuation orders somewhere nearby, you know, if you live in, you know, if you live in such and such an area, you know get out of town or get out of your home and go somewhere safe. But in Sandpoint, is there a route, is there a plan if it's like
I think FEMA.
Yeah.
FEMA would know what to do to some extent, we think.
We have talked to Bob Howard.
Okay.
I think there is a plan.
And I know that they were talking about, they've told us that they are going to update that wildfire plan. The current one is from 2016, and there should be a new one in the works, and that hasn't been brought out for public comment yet, but they are working on that. So there is like talk about it. But the community from the listening session was like really missing that information. And I think part of the disconnect here is like these plans are published, but they're over 200 pages.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to go through and read that and absorb that information. So the community at the listening session was talking about how does that get brought out to the general public more easily and what that would look like to get more people that information, because it takes a while to go through all of those plans at once.
It's not an easy solution, which is why we've got this group to try to come up with a good plan.
Yeah, and we're still working through the exact details of the implementation part of this plan, but I really think that it will include stuff about that specifically, about the evacuation routes, because it really seems to be a mystery, and it is obviously a concerning thing. I mean, I know that there are so many places in Bonner County that have one way in, one way out, and that can be a major problem in disaster scenarios. I mean, if you find out ahead of time, enough ahead of time, it's not necessarily a big deal, but that's a big but.
Mm-hmm. And so that brings into one of the non-climate stressors was like the railroad. You know, should there be a railroad accident, not just what they're carrying that might pollute, but if they block an access to leave for some people.
Sure.
So it's huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, there's a thought I hadn't had before. Yeah. How many times does the railroad cross a road that basically is the only point of ingress and egress to a,
And then we worry about our lake, you know, something derails on the train bridge. I mean, it's like I said, it's huge.
And yeah.
That's why it takes the community to get together and find out that that's what they're concerned about is we don't know what to do. And so that's a good focus for us to, we won't solve everything.
Yeah. You guys are focused on, I guess, community preparedness. Do you go into kind of individual preparedness? I mean, if, you know, a disaster might not affect the whole city of Sandpoint, but it would affect, you know.
I mean, we haven't done that much work on what individuals should do specifically, but it is a question on the survey that we put together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how prepared are you individually for a disaster? And the responses so far are, I think people are a little more confident about their own preparedness than they are the county's preparedness or the city's preparedness, which I think is probably very telling for the area.
And the discussion has been good around that. And I remember one of the meetings we talked about neighborhoods, you know, getting neighborhoods together to see how we can help each other when that happens. So I think all those conversations, I think, are just great. They help.
You're listening to 88.5 KRFY. This is the morning show, and we're talking with Michaela Sundquist, Katie Botkin, and Pam Duquette about Sandpoint Forward. When did you guys start? And then what is, I guess, do you have a timeline, a plan of, what are you working on? Okay, when did it start?
Well, and I started last April with our pre-grant application meeting. So we met probably once a week with Pam, myself, and a couple of our MFPP practitioners to apply for the grant. And then we waited with bated breath and got it. And so we started our Sandpoint Forward project around August of 2024. And it's a one-year cycle. So this cycle of the grant will finish in July. But I think Katie has a little follow-up to that.
Yes.
Yeah, so I came on, I actually started working around November. They were looking for a co-lead. And Susan Drumheller, some of you might know, who is a member of our board of directors at Project 7B, where I also work, had been in contact with people at MF, I believe at the Model Forest Policy Program. So I got that job through her. She recommended me and I interviewed. But through the process of working through this plan, I'm seeing that a lot of the solutions to this might be related to land use. So, for example, I just yesterday was talking to Vern Roof, who's the Northside Fire Commissioner, and he was saying that they're trying to get involved in the planning process earlier to prevent exactly what we were mentioning earlier, which is there are places that there's one way in, one way out. Mm-hmm. And if you have a big development in an area like that, it can be absolutely horrific, especially if there's no water for firefighters when they get up there. So currently in the county, you don't have to get fire commissioner approval for a development to subdivide. And obviously that can cause a lot of problems. Homeowners might not even know that if they're trying to buy property. So that, I think, is one of our goals for Project 7B. And also the focus of a grant. We're actually reapplying for a second round of this grant to try to implement the plan. And if we get that, we're going to focus pretty heavily on working with the county, the city, and the community on policy, essentially, that can hopefully help with the resilience piece of this and help prevent some of those potential disasters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this first stage, like this first year, is really us doing a lot of the research and following the NOAA steps to resilience, which we are provided by from our funders, and doing all the steps that they suggest. And our practitioner has been really awesome in leading us through that. And so that's what this first year is really about. And then, as Katie said, we'll kind of swing directions after we do the research and write the plan and apply for the second step, which is implementation. And our funders, like I said, this is like the first year. We're a pilot program. So we've also been reporting back to them as well to give them more information about how it's going. And they want to keep doing things like this, and communities want to keep doing things like this. So we're optimistic that this will keep moving forward. But yeah, it's been a lot of research and planning and talking and thinking about things I've never even thought about.
Learned a lot.
Yeah. Sure.
Well, okay. What have you what have you learned?
That's here? A good way for you to share.
Now that,
a segue to Michaela.
Yeah. What surprises you about your, you know, what you've been researching here? You mentioned already, of course, the flooding that we've had. I mean, or that flooding has been historically the most.
Yeah, I would have never thought that. Another thing, too, that's coming up much more frequently is how tied insurance policies, like homeowners insurance policies, are to weather. Mm. And that would really impact us in Idaho. There's a couple of news articles about it. And down in Boise, actually, an article was just written 2 days ago that Boise Homes, their policies are being dropped. Their coverage is being dropped. So that's something that I knew a little bit about, but I didn't realize how prevalent that was and how much that is affecting Idahoans. And another thing that I've been researching, that I've been talking to these two about, because it truly blew my mind, the statistic, was I have been looking at Sandpoint's data from Headwaters Economics, which is an awesome resource that does a lot of rural data points, like population and all of those things, like a census. And they ran numbers and found out that about 1,600 people, a little over 1,600 people in 2023 in Sandpoint were renters. And over 800, so over half that number, pay more than 30% of their income to rent, which just really was, I mean, I know that, but to see that like written out was really mind-blowing, that this is a massive swing in a community of like the haves and the people that are working really hard to pay their rent. And that's over half of the people that rent here. So that's something I learned that has really stuck with me. I tell people that all the time now.
Yeah, that's a statistic I don't think I had heard before. Well, how can people get involved? If people want to talk to you guys or attend an event or a meeting or something like that,
I think the easiest way is, first of all, take the resilience survey, which is still up, and the link, I'll give you a second to get a pen if you have it, is bit.ly/sandpointready with the S and the R capitalized. So that's bit.ly/sandpointready. And with that link, you can take the survey. You can tell us your opinion about what to prioritize in terms of the assets and the hazards, the different weather disasters that are potentially affecting us. And you can also volunteer. There's a space at the bottom where you can send us your email and offer general feedback as well. So please go to that link. Again, it's bit.ly/sandpointready.
Yeah, that data has been really helpful. Katie actually recently showed us what everyone has said last meeting, and it's really beneficial for us to get that information as we're planning. And I wanted to give a definition here. When we use the term assets, we mean like things that we want to protect, things that we deem in this community that are really important. So the lake would be an asset that we've talked about. That's what we mean when we use that word. And hazard would be what could impact the lake in a negative way. So just some definitions there. We've been using the technical terms because we've been going to all these meetings and know it. But please take our survey that Katie mentioned. She did a really great job putting that together.
Okay. You could also email us each individually.
Okay. Is there, do you guys have a, okay, you mentioned the bit.ly site. Do you have a that's the website for now? There is no same
that's,
point
that's
forward.
That's the survey link. Okay. If you there's also a page on the Project 7B website that I just put up about the Sandpoint Forward project.
Cool.
So if you go to 7B.org, project7b.org, it's on there.
Okay.
We don't really have a
we don't actually have like a devoted website because it is a like a year long project.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's not going to be an ongoing organization. Mm-hmm. Or is it? I mean,
hopefully.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the work will definitely continue.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You'll go into the implementation phase, and then, I guess, how do you see it going forward? After that, do you think this will be a group of people who continue to get together, or is this a project that is going to come to a close?
I think it could evolve, and that's like the really cool thing about this work that we're bringing up is that it ties into what Pam is doing with the sustainability committee at the city, what Katie's doing with Project 7B and land use management, and this all ties together. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if like our Sandpoint Forward team will necessarily stay the same and stay together for all those years, but the work that we're doing ties into so many things that are already present in the community. And ideally, our goal is to have this as a published plan, either with the city, with the county, in some form when we get to that implementation stage, so that this will be documented, published, and we can say that we have a resilience plan. That's our end goal, is to have this be a published document.
Yeah, and I would say, just personally also, with my work with Project 7B, it's been very helpful to have this time with the other stakeholders, the other people involved in the team, because they're such valuable assets to our community. And working collaboratively with other organizations and other individuals has been a really good experience. And mm-hmm. I'm so happy that we were able to do that.
Yeah, me too.
And the community devote so much time to mm-hmm. it.
Really come out to help. And that's like, we know these people personally, individually, but get the group together and find their skills and their background and how they're interested in the same same process and end product. And I would, maybe we should do a definition of resilience and sustainability just to make that clear with people, because I know that's been an issue. I can read what the comprehensive plan for Sandpoint has come up with for sustainability. And it is a continuing process of social and economic development which meets the needs of the present generation without compromising the needs and aspirations of future generations, based on principles that assure good stewardship of resources and responsible outcomes relative to the built and natural environments. So it's pretty encompassing.
Well, okay.
And then resilience.
Oh, yes. And resilience, Michaela. Or Katie.
Or Katie.
Yeah. So I touched on it a little bit earlier, but resilience is the ability to adapt to disasters effectively.
Yeah.
That's the short version.
Right. And there's an intertwine there. And if for any of our science listeners out there, we are focusing on what would be called adaptation. So the weather-related impacts have already happened, and we're focusing on how do we adapt them to protect our community, our resources, and our environment to the best of our possible abilities. So that's the lens that we're focused on in this work.
Hmm. And it is a pilot, so we are all kind of new. We've all had the same interest in the past, but how to work it, it's a work in progress. Like so many good things.
Yeah. And I guess I've been asking mostly about, of course, you know, how this is going to affect people locally. But this is a pilot program. You're one of the first 11,
in the nation,
in the country to do this. So the expectation is, or was when you signed up for it, that, more cities are going to learn from what you guys have done here.
Feedback. Right. And we do have cohort support once a month. There's a meeting where we can ask questions and share.
Yeah, our leaders, actually, we just had a meeting recently with them to talk a little bit more about how we do more advanced mapping, actually. So that was like one of those other meetings where our funders of the project met Katie and I and our two mappers and our practitioner and our community director, and we all got together and listened and talked to get some potential more funding to do more accurate mapping. Mm-hmm. So it really is like a work in progress. It evolves all the time. Mm-hmm. But I think what's so powerful about that is like we can take what the community is bringing to us and work with that mm-hmm. in different ways. So we have a plan, we are following a step, and then things ebb and flow as we need them. But it was really cool for our funders to meet with us and have this like further discussion. So that's like part of being the pilot mm-hmm. is we tell them, hey, this isn't working, or hey, we need more help. And they're able to come and do some tweaks and cool. we can provide input.
Because there is a curriculum
yeah.
that we mm-hmm. are following with the practitioner
uh-huh.
for this year's program. We're not so sure of curriculum for the next.
Yeah, I think it's going to be different.
Organic.
Yeah. If we get the funding for next year, it will definitely be right. a little different.
When we get the funding for next year.
Yeah. Does your plan, the plan that you think you'll be drafting the next year, that you know, knocking on wood, mm-hmm. Is there wildfire and flood? That's going to be the focus, the exclusive focus, or will there be other things?
So it won't be the exclusive focus, but mm-hmm. I actually was working on the grant. Mm-hmm. I've been over the past few days. I've been working mm-hmm. on the next iteration of the grant, mm-hmm. and we do focus pretty heavily on land use implications for fire and land use implications for flood. Mm-hmm. And there are some things, for example, another thing that is sort of quirky about county land use is that at this point, Panhandle Health District is not involved prior to subdivisions with saying like, yeah, you can subdivide this land and put in a septic system and it's not going to affect your neighbors well. That's problematic for a lot of reasons. And that's another thing that we would be focusing on policy-wise. Mm-hmm. But it has implications for flooding as well. Because obviously, if you have contaminated groundwater, surface water, and the contamination spreads through flooding, it just makes the problem so much worse. So not only are you dealing with flooding, but you're dealing with contaminated water.
Yeah. I can't remember. I mean, when you hear about places that are more prone to flooding, I'm thinking of Kentucky, Appalachia, that right. part of the country. That's always a horrible thing that you hear about.
Right.
We really don't think much of flooding, which is, but it's
right.
Mm-hmm. It's in a different manner of flooding or severity.
Yeah.
I guess,
but it's not. Yeah, it's not that cool, clean lake right. water, Pondere rising a little bit. It's it's.
And other. We have several dams on the river.
That's right.
You know, just uh-huh. don't know.
Yeah, but we mm-hmm. are with a grant mm-hmm. because we haven't worked through all of the things that we want to do as the end goal. Some of it's a little vague, like what exactly are we going to do to implement the plan? Here's some ideas, but we may mm-hmm. add to them as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And also extreme weather. Mm-hmm. Changes is one of our focuses. You know, it's really, really hot, and then mm-hmm. then we get this really deep freeze for too long at sometimes, mm-hmm. and it wreaks havoc on the forests and mm-hmm. the water and us.
Yeah, that does seem to be happening, doesn't it?
And wind. I keep mm-hmm. saying we have been windier in the past 5 years. I know they laugh because I keep saying, don't forget wind.
Keep saying wind.
And so the other day, somebody else, I can't remember who it was, but mentioned wind. And Michaela's like, there you go. And it's like, see, uh-huh. those of us that have been here a long time know that we weren't uh-huh. always this crazy windy.
Yeah. Well, that is interesting. As we move to make space for the Bonner Community Food Bank to come in here and talk about their event this weekend, what else do you guys want the listeners to know about, and how can they reiterate again how they can get in touch if they want to learn more?
Yeah, so the best way to get in touch again is mm-hmm. via the resilience survey or to volunteer at bit.ly/standpointready, SNR uppercase. Okay. So that's probably the best way. Mm-hmm. Or you can go to the Project 7B website. You can just search Project 7B and go to our page there.
Yeah, and I think I would want listeners to know that this team is like never full, so to speak. So if you're listening to us for the first time and you like what we're talking about and you find it interesting, you are more than welcome to get in touch with us and join us. Like we all talked about, this is not the three of us sitting here and our practitioner. This is a community. We have done this work with the help of our community, for the community, and we're always wanting more community involvement and engagement. So if that's you out there in radio land and you like it, please take the survey. Katie said there is a place to leave your email and we will get in touch with further steps, but we're open and we want to hear what you have to say.
I would agree with that. And our next meeting actually is next Thursday.
Correct.
At
1 o'clock.
I can never remember times. I have to look at my calendar. It's too full. And it lasts until 2:30.
3 o'clock.
Yeah. 3 o'clock.
Yeah. Plan for 3 o'clock.
And it's somewhere is the, if you leave your email on that survey, then we can get you on our list and tell you how to zoom in if you don't want to join in person. We meet at the library. I have to say that in person I like because that really promotes conversation. It's kind of hard when you're on Zoom, but we do both. People are on Zoom and people share it.
And you don't have to have like a background in this.
An
either.
Interest, a concern.
An interest, a concern, a want, but don't necessarily have to have a background in this. I'm a mental health counselor, so my education is not in this realm at all. But I'm interested and passionate about it. So if you're thinking, oh, well, this isn't my degree or education or experience, that's okay. You don't need that to come on board. Just your interest and love for this community.
And bring your passion.
Okay. So next meeting is a week from today. Next Thursday at 1 o'clock at the East Bonner County Library.
Correct.
And you can go and attend in person, or there's you can find a Zoom link online. And well, Michaela, Katie, Pam, thank you very much.
Thank you,
Jack.
Chatting.
And thank you, KRFY, our community radio, 88.5.
On this date, 1972, 1971, excuse me, Janis Joplin, the late Janis Joplin, actually started her posthumous run at number one on the U.S. singles charts with this hit, a Kris Kristofferson cover. She had passed away the year before in October of 1970, but she hit number one on this date in 1971 with this one. And we'll be back with more talking on the morning show in just a minute.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train. And I was feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained and rode us all the way into New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana.
It's 88.5 KRFY. That was Janis Joplin off of her album Pearl. With a Kris Kristofferson penned tune, me and Bobby McGee. And we talked about that, I suppose, right before I played the song, but it was at number one on this date, beginning a 2-week run at the top of the pop charts in 1971. Michaela, Katie, and Pam have left the room, and entering the room now is Anna Camp, the volunteer and development coordinator for the Bonner Community Food Bank, and also Brendan Kelty, who is, for unrelated reasons, is here from the Panetta Theater. He's the technical director and marketing coordinator. But he is also, as he says, a cheerleader for all local organizations, like, for example, the Food Bank, which your event is tomorrow evening, daytime?
Oh, no, it's middle of the day.
Middle of the day.
Middle of the day, lunchtime.
Well, there we go. Tell us what this is. This is, and how long have you been doing this particular fundraiser?
So tomorrow is the Empty Bowl fundraiser, and it is going to be right downtown and at the Marigold Bistro. And we've been doing this fundraiser now, I guess, non-consecutive. It's, we've done 4 Empty Bowl fundraisers so far.
It has been, it's a perennial.
It is, yes. And we had taken quite a break during the COVID season. And I think initially the fundraiser was hosted in the evening, and then we switched it around and made it an afternoon lunch event.
It's a perfect lunch event, I think.
It is, especially on a actually the first day of spring today, on a cold spring, early spring.
And so it is the first day of spring. The Empty Bowl fundraiser at the Marigold Cafe, Marigold Bistro, sorry. And that is in, people might remember it, same location as
Tango.
Tango, it used to be Tango. That's what it was called, and that was, and that is now the Marigold Bistro.
Correct.
And that's in that great big bank.
The great big bank. The physical address is 414 Church Street.
Okay.
And we're going to be setting up there tomorrow in the morning, and we'll be inviting guests in and serving lunch at 11:30 until 2 o'clock. So you can drop in anytime during those hours. I think what makes this this fundraiser really unique is that we're partnering with the art department at Sandpoint High School. It's really wonderful because not only do you get to support the food bank by purchasing lunch, but you will get a keepsake handmade bowl to take home with you, made by local high school students that they've been working on for weeks and weeks.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
It's a partnership with you partner with the art department.
We do.
And who else is at the Empty Bowl fundraiser?
Some of our sponsors are first and foremost the art department, led by Zabriel Dillon. They received a grant from STCU, which is the Spokane Teachers Credit Union, to produce these bowls. So they received a grant to pay for the clay and the glaze. And Lighthouse Specialty Food Store is also a major sponsor. We're going to be hosting a silent auction with some really incredible baskets that we've put together. So a silent auction will be available during the lunchtime hours. So if you'd like to purchase a big Easter basket for your sweetie, that's a good opportunity for that. Better Together Animal Alliance is also a partner in this. Last year, we did sell out of bowls. Uh-huh. We had 100 handmade bowls that the students made. But this year, in anticipation of selling out of them, we've doubled it. So now we're going to have 200 handmade bowls that our diners can take home with them. But some of the diners just wanted to take the bowls home. And so we also, Better Together was really fantastic in supplying some bowls that we can use from their thrift store.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. In the Music Conservatory, we're going to have live music from 11:45 to 12:45.
Sweet.
Yes.
The Music Conservatory always provides fine music.
It is fine music.
Strings? A horn section, bagpipes, probably.
Oh,
no.
It could be anything.
It
could be anything.
It sounds nice. Okay. All important question is what's on the menu?
What is on the menu? So we're going to have 2 soups available, and it's going to be butternut squash bisque and beef with chili with beef. You could, put it either way. And each of the soup choices come with bread and dessert. And your choice of a beverage.
Okay. Yum. Okay. and the hours again, it's we mentioned the location, but it's The music is from 11:45 to 12:45. If you want to see that,
definitely.
But you can go from how long do you expect you'll be there?
We'll be there from 11:30 to 2 p.m. serving lunch.
Okay.
And the tickets are first come, first serve. So if you'd like to ensure that you get a bowl, last year I know that we had a bit of a line, but this year we'll have bowls, hopefully, for everyone who shows up.
But you sold out last year.
We did. And tickets at the door.
Tickets are at the door. Okay. Can you make a reservation or anything like that?
No.
Okay. Well, then, this is exciting.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm excited. Everyone's really been looking forward to it. And the whole team at the Bonner Community Food Bank has been working really hard.
It's going to be, the weather calls for a great day for soup.
Yes.
No question. Not going to be a great day for standing in line outside.
Oh, it's not going to be out there. Yes. We'll be in the atrium.
No. Okay.
Yes.
So, and the lineup will be in the atrium.
Correct.
Okay. Nobody has to wait out in the rain.
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, I hope not.
No.
Okay.
No. Yeah, and all the funds raised will go directly to support the mission.
Oh, there
of the
we
food
go.
Bank.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about that. All funds raised go to the Bonner Community Food Bank. Is this your biggest fundraiser of the year? Is this the big event?
It has been the biggest fundraiser of the year, but this year, drum roll, please.
Okay,
we are celebrating 45 years of service to the community. And we are working right now with a committee and a team of dedicated community members developing a plan for our 45th anniversary celebration in October. So it's going to be on October 11th. And we're going to have another big celebration.
All right. October 11th. Okay. We'll keep you in mind for that. Anything else you want to say about this fundraiser? The Empty Bowl Fundraiser.
Empty Bowl Fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
Just that we're going to have a silent auction. There's going to be live music. There's going to be delicious food. That we're going to have the high school students involved. And it's a great opportunity to not only just fill your belly, but you can fill your heart with the good feeling of knowing that the money that you spend purchasing this lunch is going to go directly to supporting the mission of the food bank.
Okay. When you have an event like this and a big turnout, have you figured out, what are the logistics of serving soup to 200 people all at once? Is that a challenge?
Yes. Well, just in a sense, you know, we're working, it's about 20 gallons of soup.
20 gallons. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to picture 20 gallons.
Yes. Okay. And we've been working with Cassandra at Marigold Bistro and her team to work out logistics. We have a team of maybe, 15 to 20 volunteers who are going to be passing out the bowls, sanitizing the bowls, and then folks will line up at the buffet line and be served their portion of soup, and we'll pick up their bread and dessert. And it's really a celebration and community support, and also an opportunity to raise awareness around food insecurity in our community.
Okay. Well, this is exciting. This is the, other than the October 11th event, which details TBD or TBA anyway, this is the big fundraiser for the food bank.
It is.
And it's at the Marigold Bistro tomorrow afternoon.
Tomorrow afternoon for lunch. Please join us. Okay. We'd love to see your smiling face.
Nobody does a lunch fundraiser except for you guys.
Bonner Community Food Bank does fundraiser.
This is a nice idea. Everybody's fighting for evening events and audience attendance. I think a lunch fundraiser is a great idea.
Thank
You're
you.
Onto something here, Anna.
Thank you. Thank you.
But speaking of evenings, Brendan,
well done.
What does the Panda Theater hold for us this weekend? I know, one I'm particularly kind of excited about. We might be attending. We'll see.
Excellent.
What's coming up at the Panda?
This Saturday, Ponderay Arts Council presents Missoula Children's Theater, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Uh-huh.
And one special thing about this event, Jack, is 50 to 60 local children are participating and performing in this event.
Indeed.
So they have, on St. Patrick's Day, actually, last week, they was that last week or this week?
This Monday.
This Monday.
Yeah.
They
I saw you in green on St. Patrick's Day.
That's right. Yeah.
Grand India.
Mm-hmm. They went to, you know, they began rehearsals and they're putting a lot of time in this week to prepare for this. And I don't know, Missoula Children's Theater is always an impressive event.
Yeah.
They bring it. So there's two showings, 1 p.m. and 4. And seating is general admission. And each of the performances should be about an hour.
Okay.
Yeah.
They started just on Monday. And they're already ready to go.
The kids did.
Or, yeah.
Of course, the production company, Missoula Children's Theater, you know, they're pros. And they've been working on this, I'm sure, for a long time.
Mm-hmm. So. Yes. How are ticket sales going? Are tickets still available to this? And how do people get their tickets?
I would recommend it. So considering the number of school children in this and their families, I would recommend getting on your ticket purchase pretty soon. Because if you've got 50 to 60 families plus folks who just want to go see the show aside from children, you're going to have a lot of folks there.
Okay.
And so general admission, doors open, I believe, an hour before the show, each show. So get your tickets and get there early, get comfy, and enjoy the show.
Okay.
I have my tickets.
Excellent.
I'm so excited. Uh-huh. Thank you.
let's see. I don't know. What else do you guys want to talk about? Anything?
Well, we've got something really interesting that's come up. Applications are open for the Panada's High School Senior Scholarship.
Okay.
So it's the Panada Theater Laurel Wagers Memorial Scholarship for high school seniors in Bonner County who are interested in studying the performing arts.
Wow.
So theater, music, theater production, etc.
This is KRFY 88.5 Pondere.
Are you bored, Jack?
No, that was. Did you hear that just now?
I did.
Yeah. Okay, that was the. That tells us that it's
on
9 o'clock. Yeah. So I'm just I'm making my small changes here. Apologies for that. That was not you getting the hook. That happened all by itself. go on, Brendan. Sorry.
So high school seniors and I guess their parents who might be listening. Mm-hmm. Let's get on it. Applications are due April 10th.
Mm-hmm.
So let's do it. Last year we had two awardees. Is that the winners?
Sure.
Very talented kids. Lots of performing artists in Sandpoint. So go ahead and get your application in. April 10th is our deadline.
Okay.
And we want to see, you know, local kids succeed. So.
Very cool. All right. This is, has this existed before?
Yes. This has been going on annually.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly how many years. Yeah. Should be said that Laurel Wagers was one of the original three Panada moms.
Aha.
Who was responsible for getting the Panada up and running back in the 80s.
Okay.
And, thank you, Laurel.
Thank you, Laurel and friends.
Yeah. I guess as long as you mention it, I will. There's a lot coming to the Panada Theater. Perhaps too much to go into right now, but I know you guys have something going on. Is it Mother's Day weekend or it's around then? The Panada moms... Sorry, I'm taking you off your game
Squirrel,
here.
Squirrel, tangent.
No, that's okay. This is a great event. It's a gala. Gala or gala? What do we call this?
Anna?
Gala.
Gala. Okay, I've heard both. Tomato, tomato.
Uh-huh.
But yes, that is coming up in, I believe, May, the first weekend of May. And it's going to be a what do we call this? Decadent, luxurious gala. For those patrons of the Panada, and in an effort to kind of say thank you as well as, you know, continue to our contribute to our funds, our operating funds and our century fund.
Okay. The gala event. Yes.
That's you gala get.
Okay. All
right, great. And we've had a similar type of thing last year, and folks, you know, the little theater was decked out to the nines. And we had live music, and then we moved on over to the big theater.
You're moving it into the big one. Yeah.
So
cool.
Yep. I highly recommend checking it out.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm interested. I'd love to see it.
Are you performing? Thanks, Anna.
I am not. I will probably be, you know,
you'll be working.
Shuffling chords and mics around and whatnot.
Being technical.
All right.
Very technical. Thank you.
Okay. will Anna be performing?
I may be.
Okay.
I may be.
That's good. She favored us with a little singing along to me and Bobby McGee before the mics turned on. I think, Yeah, I think there's space for Anna.
It could be. Okay. You know, it could be Anna.
Anna, really, I'm
if
sorry.
It is a gala or gala, I don't know.
There you go, Anna.
Okay.
Very sophisticated.
Very.
Let's see. It is 9:03. I don't want to cut you off too soon, though. Any what else is going on this weekend or this coming week at the Panada? Anything in particular?
Well, you know,
or you want to wait till next Thursday?
We can just give a quick shout out the Wild and Scenic Film Festival coming up next week.
Next
so
weekend.
I'm sure we'll talk about that next Thursday. Mm-hmm. But that, of course, is the Friends of Scotsman's Peak fundraiser event.
Hold on, let me think about this. There's a if Phil is listening, and he probably is. It's one. There's a mnemonic to figure this out. It's one man, multiple peaks. I think.
I like it. Yes, you're right.
Yes. Okay. Scotchman Peaks. Yes.
That's actually easier to say.
Oh, it's like passersby.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Gotcha.
Sorry, Phil.
Yeah. Okay. That's next weekend. Their Wild and Scenic Film Festival. Always a trip, and so to speak. I think we were talking about that just last week? We were talking to... Or 2 weeks ago about the Wild and Scenic Film Festival, something like that. Yeah, that's coming up next weekend. Tomorrow, the Empty Bowl fundraiser is that's the big event in
lunch
town.
Lunch event, yes.
In the forecast, I think I said earlier today, 100% chance of precipitation tomorrow. Perfect day for a bowl of soup. Wonderful.
And a handmade bowl.
Okay.
We hope to see you there.
It's so convenient.
Yeah.
Hit the fundraiser, then just walk on over to the 1 p.m. showing of the.
There you go.
Oh, that's
get
brilliant.
A bowl of soup and then go to
something.
See.
Here.
Okay. Yeah.
Soup and a show.
Soup and a show. Let's do it.
Well, it's time now that I move on with the regularly scheduled programming for today. Bird Note comes up next. This is KRFY 88.5 Ponderé. Thank you for listening to the morning show, and we'll be back next week. Also, I'll be here tomorrow talking about the news here on North Idaho News of the Week, so tune in for that as well at 8 o'clock. Here we go. It's Spring Bursts Forth is the title of this edition of Bird Note, because it is, of course, the first day of spring.
Giddy up.
All right. Thanks, Brendan. Thanks, Anna.
Thank you.